Okay, we're beginning here Masechet Yevamot, which is the beginning of Seder Nashim. The obvious question that needs to be asked is, why does Seder Nashim begin with Masechet Yevamot? So the easy Balabatish answer to that is that it has to do with the size of the Masechtot, and that the Sadarim are set up in a way that is the declining length of these Masechtot, the longest Masechtot being first, and then the declining Masechtot afterwards, at least with regards to Mishnayot, the length of the Masechtot and the Mishnayot. So that's how the Masechtot are set up. So that would be the simple answer. Yevamot is the longest, and therefore it is first. But obviously that does not suffice. And therefore we really have to ask the question as to why Yevamot is the first Masechtot. The Rambam writes that it's the first Masechtot because it's Baal Korcha. It happens against her will. As opposed to Kiddushin, or to both, or any of the other aspects of marriage, which are items that are optional. One can get married, not get married. I mean, these are things that are a decision of the individual. On the other hand, Yibum is something that you're compelled to deal with. And since you're compelled to deal with it, then it's appropriate that you deal with that first, rather than items that are optional afterwards. It's an interesting answer of the Rambam. The Tosfot Yishanim Po already raises the issue and brings up something that we saw in a Tosfot back in Moed Katan. And he says here, Yesh makshim amay matchil seder nashim biyevamot. Da at chulei puranuta lo matchilin. We never want to start with something that's bad. And by definition, yevamot is bad because somebody passed away without children and therefore there's a need for yibum over here. Va'adraba, hayalo natchil b'kiddushin uktubot v'gitin v'achar kach yevamot. Makes no sense. So v'nira mishom dechtiv v'aya imunot itecha chusein yeshuot. That's the pasuk the Gemara quotes in Daf Lamed Gimel in Shabbat with regards to the source for the different starim in Shas. And there it says itecha zeh seder moed chusein zeh seder nashim. That the order of the starim goes moed and then nashim. V'im kein seder nashim hu batar seder moed. Nashim always comes after moed. Demisayim b'masechet moed katan. Davi purunuta, that ends with moed katan, which is not the way. We have it ending with chagiga. But if you remember, there was a Tosfot back in moed katan on daf chav chedam with bet, that says exactly what this Tosfot Yishonim says, is that moed katan ends off on a slightly lighter note, but on a note about death. And that's what comes, Yevamot comes right after that, because they're both talking about the issues of death and passing away. And therefore we put a puranut, something negative, next to something else that is negative. That's one reason that he gives. Inami. Mifaresh tchila ezu isha asura, vezu isha muteret. Vadar mifaresh kulumile dinashim. First tells you which women you are permitted to marry, which you're not permitted to marry. Then it goes back and then discusses the issues of nashim in general. Ve'od yesh lomar, Mishum dehi mitzvah rishona shira binashim. Is the first mitzvah that applies by nashim. Kidichtiv b'tamar. Bo eleishet achicha v'yabei multah. So this raises some interesting issues, which is the fact that Yibum exists prior to Matan Torah. Yibum, we know, was mentioned in Sefer Bereshit with regards to Tamar and Yehuda, where Tamar is married to Yehuda's children, and Yehuda demands of Tamar that she marry the brother of her husband who passed away in order to be miyabim, or he tells his son he must be miyabim muta, and he also wants her to wait later on for Shelah, his youngest son, in order that he grows up, that she should perform yibum with that. So we see a concept of yibum that exists prior to Matan Torah. Same might be true of Boaz and Ruth, where yibum is also mentioned in Megillat Ruth, depending on when you set Megillat Ruth chronologically. The Gemara has a machloka that's where it's set. But if you set it also earlier on, that would also place it possibly prior to Matan Torah. And therefore you would have Yibum also prior to Matan Torah there. But we see that the concept of Yibum is a global concept, a concept that exists even prior to Matan Torah. There is a machloket amongst the Rishonim as to whether Kiddushim applies prior to Matan Torah. Is there a concept of marriage, Kiddushim, which generates Erva prior to Matan Torah? According to some of the Rishonim, there is. According to many of the Rishonim, including the Rambam, there was no concept of Kiddushim prior to Matan Torah. That means that there was no Erva through marriage prior to Matan Torah. That means that Yibum was there before Kiddushim. It's the first mitzvah within Nashim, as the Tosfot Yeshanim points out over here. The first one exclusively because Kiddushim is not a mitzvah prior to Matan Torah. If you do that, then it makes sense that Yevamot is the first Masechta mentioned here, because Yibum is the first mitzvah that we encounter with regards to women in the Torah. And that's why it would lead off Seder Nashim. In addition to that, heard Rav Rosenzweig that Yibum also has an interesting aspect about it, which is that Yibum, in a sense, is a more powerful form of connection than Kiddushim is. Because Yibum survives the death of the husband. Whereas Kiddushim might terminate at the death of the husband, Yibum is something that persists even beyond the death of the husband. So it's actually a stronger binding force between the husband and wife, this Yibum, than the actual Kiddushim is. And that would say that Yibum, in a sense, is a stronger mitzvah, stronger form of bonding. And beyond that, that type of bonding exists not only with the husband, but the family as a whole. It's the marriage of the woman into the family, not simply to the individual that's there. And Yibum is a signatory of that relationship, which is that the woman has not just married a man, she's now married into a whole family that comes with it. And so that is demonstrated or is put into practice through the Yibum. And therefore, the Yibum might be appropriate to be before Kiddushim and Kedubot, because it really signals the strength of relationship that is built in marriage that actually will go beyond the death of the husband and actually involves the marriage into the family and not simply the marriage to the individual. For that reason that we just gave here, a number of reasons that we gave here, Yevamot is the lead-off Masechta in Seder Nashim. Now, what I will do now is I'm going to read you the Parsha in Parshat Ki Tetzeh, which is the source for Yibum in the Torah. The reason I'm going to do that is because the Gemara, as the Gemaras want to do, will give us pieces and parts of Yibum all throughout the Masechta, a lot of which you wish you knew at the beginning of the Masechta, because that knowledge is important to understanding the first Mishnah on the Masechta and understanding the Masechta as a whole. So I'm just going to read it to you, and I will quickly mention to you many of the drashot that will become important to us and the knowledge which is important in order to learn the Gemara. The first one is, Ki yeshvu achim yachdav. Two brothers live together. This has three drashot that come out of here, which are all important. The first is, Ki yeshvu achim yachdav. Achim yachdav teaches us that it's achim meha'av. Yibum only applies to brothers who are brothers through their father. It has to be through the father that they're brothers, not through the mother. I mean, if they're also brothers through their mother, it's fine. But if they're just brothers through the mother, they have a common mother, they're half-brothers through their mother, then there is no din of Yibum. That'll be learned out later on in the Masechta, I think, in Daf Yud Zayin, where the Gemara will darshan either Ki Yishvu Yachim Yachdav, that Yachdav the Yerusha, that they are together for Yerusha. Yerusha is dependent on the father, and therefore, that's what they learn. The other limud there is that it's a gzer shava to the achim of Yaakov, Bnei Yaakov, and Bnei Yaakov are only brothers through the father. So either way, we learn out, number one is, Ki Yeshvu Achim Yachdav, is that they have to be brothers through the father in order for Yibum to apply. Number two is, Ki Yeshvu Achim Yachdav, is that they have to be in the world at the same time. That means that a brother who is born after the death of his older brother is not ra'ui to Yibum. They have to be alive at the same time in order for this to be relevant, because they have to have a yeshiva achat be'olam. They have to be in the world together. Again, this becomes relevant in all the Mishnayot that we're going to do, but you have to assume that the brothers are alive at the time that this man is married and the time that he passes away and his wife is available for Yibum. If the brother is born after that point in time, Yibum does not exist. Umeit achad mehem. One of them passes away, uben ein lo, and he does not have a child. I'm translating that as child because the Gemara will say ben ein lo does not mean he doesn't have a son. It means that he has no zera. He has no offspring whatsoever. That means if he has a grandson, grandchild of any sort, great-grandchild, daughter, anybody that's there, Yibum is not performed. As long as there's offspring from him, then there is no din of Yibum. It has to be that there's absolutely no offspring in order for there to be a din of Yibum. One piece of his offspring have to be alive at this point. Even if his children had passed away, but his grandchildren are alive, that's fine. An offspring that is alive is the requirement. It has to be at the time that he passes away, he has to have a live offspring that continues on his namesake, or that he has lineage from him. If everybody's predeceased to him, then there is a requirement of Yibum. Lo tia eshet ameta chutza liish zar. The woman may not marry an outside person. We'll see later on in the Masechta that there is a restriction on this woman from marrying outside. It seems to be it's only a lav, which may not prevent her from marrying. I mean that if she goes through with the marriage, it may not be that she's not married. It just may be that she is an Isur lav, which we'll go through in the Masechta, whether an Isur lav prevents an individual from getting married. Yivama yavola ulikacha lo liisha v'yivma. Yivama yavola, this is what we learned, that it's Baal Korcha, that he just has to have bia with her, and the Yibum goes through, even without acquiescence from her, even without any kiddushin, without anything besides the consummation of the marriage by the brother, the Yibum takes place and is completed. The Chachamim introduced, which we're going to get to later in the Masechta, a concept called Ma'amar, which is the equivalent of kiddushim for Yibum. Vaya ha-bechor asher teleid, yakum ha-shem achiv ha-meit, v'lo yimachesh shemo mi-Yisrael. This has a number of factors. Vaya bechor. The Gemara here darshins that the bechor means not only that the eldest child of the new marriage, but also the oldest brother has precedence or a mitzvah to do the yibum, that the yibum should be formed by the oldest brother. Again, looking at the oldest brother as being a replacement for the patriarch of the family, he is the leader of the family in that sense, and therefore he should be the one that performs the yibum with the brother who passed away. Obviously, if the oldest brother passed away, then that's not as relevant, but there is a precedence given to the older brother, not that if any of the other brothers do it, it's not considered to be Yibum, and not if they jump the gun and do it, are they blocked from doing it. Lo yimachesh shmo mi-Yisrael. Lo yimachesh shmo mi-Yisrael. His name will not be wiped out from Israel. The Gemara will darshin, v'lo sheshmo machui. If his shame is already machui, then you don't have to perform this. For instance, if the husband is a saris, if the husband is unable to reproduce, and passes away, there's no obligation of Yibum on the brother then to be Mekayim, the Shem Achiv, because he was unable to have children anyway. So Shmo is Machui from the onset of his marriage, and therefore their brothers do not have an obligation to continue on his name, where he himself couldn't have continued on his name. If the individual does not want to take the woman as a Yivama, she goes to the Beit Din and says he doesn't want to perform Yibum. From here, the Gemara will learn, that Chalitza, which is the option to opt out of performing Yibum, is only applicable when you can perform Yibum. The two are inseparable in this case. Meaning that when there's an obligation of Yibum, there's also an obligation of Chalitza. If there's no obligation of Yibum, there's also no obligation of Chalitza. That means that the woman goes free without any necessity for Chalitza. There's no requirement like of get or anything like that. It's wiped out. If there's no Yibum, there's no Chalitza. The Rishonim here argue about how many mitzvot are involved in Yibum. Is there a mitzvah of Yibum and separately there's a mitzvah of Chalitza? That's why the Rambam counts him in his Minyan mitzvot. Or do we say that there's a mitzvah of Yibum or Chalitza? It's one mitzvah. The mitzvah is either perform Yibum or perform Chalitza. That's where Rav Saadia goes and counts the mitzvot. It's a singular mitzvah that has two options. Either you do it or you don't do it. How do you do it? Yibum. How you don't do it is Chalitza. So that is a machloket amongst the Rishonim as to how to count this as a separate mitzvah or as a singular mitzvah. In addition to that, the question of whether how independent is Chalitza from Yibum, even though the Gemara makes that statement, there are cases where we're going to see later on in the Masechta where the Mishnayot tell us that you may not perform Yibum, but you must perform Chalitza. For instance, when there's an Isur Lav involved, a Kohen Gadol, his brother passes away, and a Kohen Gadol has a requirement to marry a Betula, has a requirement. Obviously, the woman that he's going to take in through Yibum is not a Betula because she was married to his brother beforehand, and therefore she's by definition not a Betula. So there's a restriction against the Kohen Gadol marrying her, but if he was to marry her, the Kedushin would be Chal, because it's only an Isur Aseh or an Isur Lav, depending on what the issue is. In that case, the Mishnayot tell us, Chalitza, no Yibum. Don't perform Yibum, because it's an illegal marriage. Do perform Chalitza, because you have to release yourself. Why do you have to perform Chalitza in those cases? So that is also Machloket Rishonim. Some of the Rishonim believe you perform Chalitza, Midrabanan. It's all Midrabanan, it does fall away, but Midrabanan, you have to perform Chalitza. Others believe, no, that this is a chalitza midoraita. Because since min haTorah, the Kiddushin would be chal, therefore there is a manifestation of chalitza. Even though you're not allowed to perform yibum here, nevertheless there is a manifestation of chalitza, because the reason you're restricted is, if for the first yibum, or the first bia, you have a mitzvah to perform for the yibum, after the first bia, you don't have that mitzvah. So we're not going to have you consummate a marriage that cannot endure. Right, you're going to go and do the yibum, perform the yibum, have one bia, and that's it, and be done. That's not an enduring marriage, right? And then be megarisher. That's not what we want. We want an enduring marriage to come about. Some of the Rishonim view that as being, again, a chalitza can exist on its own, and is a chiyuv doraita. Others say that's only a din derabonon in those cases that we force you to do chalitza, because otherwise it doesn't look like you've released her, because it's not obvious that she should be released in that case. Here's the procedures for yibum. This also becomes important. This is what happens to a person who will not lo yivne et beit achiv. There are a number of just showed from this. Also an application here. Lo yivne et beit achiv, which is, if he didn't build his brother's house, shuv lo yibane. He may not do it in the future. Meaning that if you opt out of doing the yibum now, then there is no yibum in the future. That's number one. Number two is, lo yivne beit achiv. Is beit achiv means one. If the brother has multiple wives, yibum is only performed with one of those women. As soon as you perform yibum with one of those women, then all the other women are released from the binding of yibum, or zika of yibum, as the Gemara will call it later on, because it says beit achiv. There's only one bayit that he has to build, not multiple batim. In addition to that, it says lo yivne beit achiv. Also, only one of the brothers has to perform yibum. If there are multiple brothers and multiple wives, as soon as one of the brothers performs yibum, the other brothers cannot perform yibum, because it says beit achiv again. There's a singular form. It's only one bayit that is built, not multiple batim that are built. So it's from both perspectives. As soon as one of the women is taken for yibum, all the other women are released. Number two is, if one of the brothers performs yibum, all the other brothers are no longer relevant to the story of yibum. So that's all learned out of lo yivne et beit achiv. And again, that all has relevance over here. And then, benikra shmo be Yisrael beit chalutza. Now, that's in the end of parsha here. There's one more piece of information you need to know in order to understand the Masechta. Now that is back in Vayikra, parsha achremot, where it has a list of arayot. Over there it says, in Vayikra yudchet, pasuk tetzayin, ervat eshet achicha lo tikaler, ervat achicha hi. You're not allowed to marry your brother's wife. There's a chiyuv of karet in marrying your brother's wife, which is a restriction. Yibum overrides that, or eliminates that problem. The way that the Gemara terms it is, ervat eshet achicha and yavamo yavo aleha, those two mitzvot were said b'dibur echad. They were said in one breath. Why are they said in one breath? The idea that they are able to work with each other. Even though there is a restriction against marrying one's brother's wife, nevertheless, there is an overriding factor called yibum. But that means, when there's a mitzvah of yibum, there is no iser v'eshet ach. But if there is no mitzvah of yibum, then eshet ach exists, and therefore, there is punishment of karet. So you're dealing with a very fine line. You need to know, if there's a mitzvah of yibum, then there's a mitzvah to perform, eshet ach does not apply. But if there's no mitzvah yibum, then it's not just like, okay, maybe I'll marry her. Then there's a restriction of karet. This is one of the arayot. So you have to know that there's a tension between these two mitzvot, and that only when yibum applies is the other one suspended. But if yibum doesn't apply, then the other is not suspended. It's not like it's hutra over here. It's only duchuya when we know that there's a mitzvah of yibum that applies. The last thing that you need to know from the psukim over here is, in Perek Yudchet, Pasuk Yudchet, it says, Bisha el achuta lo tikach. Person may not marry two sisters. Litzvor legalot ervata lea bechaya. This isra only applies when they're alive. I mean that a person may not marry a sister while his wife is still alive. If his wife passes away, then he can marry the sister. I mean that even if he divorces the wife, he can't marry the sister until the first wife passes away. But once she's passed away, he can't marry her. The term that's used here is litzror. The Gemara is going to darshan, coming up, on the word litzror, that's something called tzara. A tzara is a terminology, actually, we just saw in Rosh Hashanah. That is the way that Chana and Penina, the wives of Elkanah, are termed towards each other. They are tzarot. Tzara is a co-wife. The reason that the term is used is probably obvious. Why Tzarah? Because they are competitive with each other. They are problematic for each other. So they are a Tzarah, Chad B'Sheni. And that is the terminology that's used for a co-wife. Over here, the Pasuk says, Isha l'achotah lo tikach litzror. When there is a tzror, lo tikach. Even though, technically, we say that Yibum overrides the Isur of Erva, it only overrides the Isur of Erva of Eshet Ach. It does not override any other lo tikach. It does not override any other Erva. That means that if your brother is married to someone who is an Erva, then if there's Yibum to be performed over here, no Yibum takes place. Why? Because the woman is an erva to you, and Yibum will not override that erva. That's what the first Mishnah is going to discuss. This whole first Mishnah is going to discuss that, where the brother is married to a woman who is restricted to the one who has to perform Yibum. So, number one, that woman is Tura. Number two is, her tzarot, her co-wives, are also exempted. And that comes out of the word litzror. Anybody who is connected over here is exempt. Lo tikach, may not be taken. In addition to that, this is where it becomes more complex, and this is what our Mishnah is about today, and that's why I'm working on it now. The word litzror here is written in plural. The Gemara brings other psukim to learn it from. We'll just use this simple explanation, which is, it doesn't say latzur, but litzror in plural, which means that even if she's what's called a tzarav, tzarata, then it's still applicable here, this restriction, which means, let's take three brothers, Reuven, Shimon, and Levi. Reuven is married, passes away without any children. Shimon now is obligated to marry Reuven's wife through Yibum. The problem is, Reuven had two wives. One of the wives is an erva to Shimon. The other one is not an erva to Shimon. Let's call it Rachel and Leah. Rachel is an erva to Shimon, so he doesn't have to perform Yibum. But because he has to perform Yibum with Rachel, Leah is also exempt. Because she's a tzara to Rachel, Reuven's wife, she's a tzara. No problem. But there's a third brother, Levi. And Levi is not related. So Levi, in the end, marries Leah. He does Yibum and performs Yibum on Leah. And then Levi dies without any children. And now Leah falls before Shimon. Now, as far as direct relationship, Shimon has no relationship to Leah. Because the erva was Rachel, who was married to Reuven. Nevertheless, since Leah is a tzara to Rachel, then she's also exempted when she becomes the wife of Levi. That's number one. Number two is, if Levi has other wives, Leah will also be puter those other wives. So here, that's what's called a tzarata, which is a process that can go on forever and ever. No matter how many brothers there are, no matter how many times that they get remarried, as long as you're a derivative of a tzara, each time that happens, then the women that are married or co-wives are all exempt. And that's what happened here. Even though Leah has no relationship to Shimon, she's exempt from Yibum. But not only is she exempt herself, she also exempts any co-wives of Levi. And this goes on again. If one of the co-wives of Levi marries another brother, and then they fall before Shimon, they'll also be patur because they were once connected to a tzara. That's the way the Gemara learns it out of the word litzror. The way the Rambam terms it is, once somebody becomes an erva to you and eliminates the need for Yibum, they become a permanent erva from you. Cannot fall to Yibum twice, in a sense, and be restricted. So the first time when Rachel and Leah fell to Shimon, they became a rayot. They are both a rayot to Shimon. And therefore, when Leah goes and marries Levi, she still remains a rayot to Shimon. And therefore, when she comes to fall before Shimon, she's an erva. So she's patur, but she also exempts all of her co-wives, because she's an erva, and as soon as you have an erva, you exempt the co-wives. And then so on and so forth. If those co-wives are exempt, they become an erva to Shimon. If they go marry another brother, then they will also be exempt in the future if that brother passes away and comes to Shimon, as well as their co-wives. So this goes on, ad mea, the Gemara says, ad sofa olam. Those are the basics that you need to know in order to begin Masechet Yevamot. Again, we're going to get to all these things throughout the Masechta. I'm just giving you the information because it's important to know as we enter the Masechta. There are 15 women who, if they are married to the brother, will not only be exempt themselves, but they will also exempt their co-wives from marriage. Not only their co-wives, but if they marry another brother afterwards, those co-wives, then they will also be exempt. Again, so on and so forth, like we did before. And in this case, they are exempt min achalitza u'min ayibum, both from chalitza and yibum, ad sofa olam, forever and ever. You would have thought maybe it only goes one or two generations. Here the Mishnah tells you it goes on forever. This idea of an erva and a co-wife, and an erva and a co-wife can continue on and on. If there are hundreds of brothers, then Shimon will be exempt from Yibum in all these cases because they are derivative of the original marriage to Reuven where there was an erva. Why does the Mishnah put Chalitza before Yibum over here? This relates to something the Gemara will say later on. It's a statement, I think, of Rabbi Abo, where originally the mitzvah was to do Yibum. And Chalitza was the option out when you didn't perform the mitzvah of Yibum. But that's when they did it L'Shem Shamayim. Today, where we don't do it L'Shem Shamayim, the Gemara says, then we give precedence to Chalitza. And we say, do Chalitza and don't perform Yibum. And that's why the Mishnah puts Chalitza before Yibum here to tell you that the better option is Chalitza, and that's what we do today. Yibum is no longer performed today, but Chalitza is performed today. Okay, that's a basic assumption of the Gemara over here, is that we're talking about polygamy. We're talking about where people had more than one wife. This is all prior to the Cherem of the Rabbeinu Gershom. And therefore, the Gemara assumes, and the Mishnah takes it for granted, that people are married to multiple wives. And all of these scenarios that we're talking about in the Mishnah, we're talking about multiple wives, because we're talking about a tzara. We're talking about a co-wife. Ve'eluhein. These are the 15 that are mentioned in the Mishnah. Now, there are 15 here. The Gemara will later add on a 16th according to another Shita. But these 15, there are other arayot, which the next Mishnah will deal with. But these are 15 arayot that exempt their co-wives. Ve'eluhein. Bito. His daughter. So now, what is the scenario? The scenario, and this is an easy scenario, in their day, it was considered to be a really good marriage. Actually, the best marriage that you could have was to marry your niece. So as an uncle, to marry the niece. So you could have that. Reuven and Shimon. Reuven has a daughter, and Shimon, his brother, marries the daughter. So in that case, if Shimon was to pass away without any children, then Reuven would be faced with performing Yibum with his daughter and the co-wives. So he's exempt because his daughter is an erva to him, number one. And number two is the co-wives are exempted because they are tzarot to his daughter. So that's the first case here. Again, an easy scenario to come up with. The question of Bito over here, we'll get to in a second. Just remember that it's mentioned here. We'll get to later on whether that is what's meant by Bito over here. Ubat Bito, what about his granddaughter? Now, his granddaughter, again, could be the same case where he has a brother. Reuven and Shimon are brothers. Reuven has a granddaughter, and Shimon marries his great-niece. But is Shimon marrying his great-niece, which is permitted to him? Then, again, if Shimon passes away, Reuven is now forced or faced with this issue of Yibum with his granddaughter. So he is exempt. Obviously, his granddaughter is a erva. Since she's an erva, he's exempt. And so are all the co-wives associated with this granddaughter. Anybody Shimon's married to is also exempt from Yibum. Uvat Bino. And also the same thing will be true with the granddaughter through the son. In that it's a great niece. You can have a great niece one of two ways. You can have a granddaughter through your son, a granddaughter through your daughter. And then the brother, Shimon, marries the great niece. Either great niece through Reuven's daughter or great niece through Reuven's son. So in either of those two scenarios, Reuven's going to be faced with possibility of Yibum being performed with his brother's wife, who is his granddaughter. So that's these cases here. Now, the reason that this is interesting, because now Batishto, the daughter of his wife. Didn't we just say Bito? So what's the difference between Batishto versus Bito? Okay, so Rashi suggests that Bito is Bito mi anusato, which the Gemara is also going to say later on. Bito mi anusato was a daughter produced not wedlock, but produced out of wedlock. That he raped a woman, and he produced a daughter. So that's Bito, where it's his bat, but not the bat of his wife. So that's how Rashi explains Bito. We actually saw this in the Gemara in Chagiga. The Gemara there brought the Mishnah on Daf Yud Aleph Amud Abet that discussed all the different types of Torah Shebaal Peh that we have. Some of them are hanging by a string. Some of them are well-versed. One of those items was Bito Mi Anusato, which is learned out of the Gezerah Shavah, which we're going to get to in later today's Daf. Heina Heina Zima Zima. And that's how we learn it out. And because in the Torah, when it says, Bat Binah, Bat Bitah, it's not referencing his daughter through marriage. It's mentioning his daughter through extramarital birth. I mean, that's outside of marriage that this was born through a rape. Now, why is that? As Rashi points out, the Gemara mentions this, the word likuchin or nisuin or kiddushin is not mentioned in that case. There's no ishut. The word isha is never mentioned there. So there's nothing that binds them through marriage. And therefore, the bito, bat beno, according to Rashi, are all through a non-marriage instance. And that's why they're his daughters, his granddaughters, because they were not produced through marriage. Then, bat ishto is a daughter produced through isha, ishut, that's produced through marriage. what Fred said is right as well, which is Bat Ishto can also have a manifestation in his wife was previously married, and she has a daughter that she brings into the marriage. So that's the other possibility of Bat Ishto. For that reason, Tosafot says Bito refers to both Bat Anusato as well as Bat of his wife, meaning that through a marriage, his daughter, where it's all, both his wife's daughter and his daughter, and then Bat Ishto is where he brings in from the other marriage. The way Rashi learns it is that Bito is Bito Manusato, and Bat Ishto is either from a woman who had a daughter prior to their marriage, a stepdaughter, or a daughter produced through his wife. Either one is also called Bat Ishto. Now we'll have the exact same scenario, which is Bat Ishto, Bat Binah, Bat Bita. These are all a daughter, either a daughter through marriage, like Rashi is saying, or a stepdaughter. And then Bat Binah, Bat Bita is a granddaughter, either through marriage, according to Rashi, from either side, through a son or through a daughter, or a step-granddaughter, I mean a stepson that has a daughter, and a stepdaughter that has a daughter, so you have granddaughters through your stepchildren. In all of those cases, they are erva to you, but they're not erva to the brother. So Shimon can marry any of these women. He can marry, obviously, he can even marry the niece through a proper marriage, but he can marry the great-niece. He can marry the stepdaughter of Reuven. He can marry the step-granddaughters of Reuven. But then if Shimon passes away without any children, Reuven again is faced with erva. Now that comes out of Isha Ubita. Isha Bita, a man may not marry a woman and her daughter. So that's the Bat Ishto. And that includes Bat Bita or Bat Bina. There the Pasuk says, doesn't matter if it's the daughter or the daughter of the daughter or the daughter of the son, person's restricted in all of those areas. Alright, then, Chamuto, his mother-in-law. Now, Chamuto comes out of the same restriction as daughter, his wife's daughter, which is Isha Ubita. Now they marry a woman and her daughter. It doesn't matter if you're going down the lineage or up the lineage. If you're married to a woman, you may not marry her daughter. Whether it's her daughter through you or it's a daughter through marriage, meaning that it's a stepdaughter, that's Isha Ubita's restricted. But the same is true if you move up the lineage. You can't marry a woman and her daughter. So if you're already married to the daughter, you can't marry the mother of this daughter, the mother-in-law. So that's the same restriction. Comes out of the same pasuk of Isha Ubita. Chamuto. How do you have a case of Chamuto? Rashi actually comes up with a complex case. There is a very simple case to come up with a mother-in-law case, which is the same case that we just said before. Reuven has a daughter, and Shimon marries that daughter. He married his niece. Okay, then what ends up happening is that Reuven passes away. But before Reuven passes away, Reuven's daughter predeceases him. Reuven's daughter predeceases him, who is a wife of Shimon. But now, Shimon, who married his niece, his father-in-law and mother-in-law are his brother and his sister-in-law. Reuven is Shimon's father-in-law. And Reuven's wife is Shimon's mother-in-law. It's very straightforward here. He married his niece, then his brother becomes his father-in-law, and his sister-in-law becomes his mother-in-law. So again, if, in this case, Reuven's daughter predeceases him, so Shimon's wife, who was Reuven's daughter, is now no longer in the picture, and now Reuven dies. When Reuven dies, his wife is now available to Shimon. Number one, because his daughter died, and now he has no descendants. Since he has no descendants, Shimon now has to marry his wife. But the problem is, it's his mother-in-law. He can't marry his mother-in-law. That's an erva. So that's the easiest scenario to come up with. Rashi doesn't take that route. Question is why? Rashi didn't take that route. Rabbi Akiva Eiger and others discuss why Rashi didn't take that route. The reason he didn't take this route is because the Gemara in Sanhedrin. The Gemara in Sanhedrin has a machlok between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Shmuel, whether the restriction against marrying a mother-in-law only applies while the woman is still alive, the daughter is still alive. If a person is married to a woman, he may not marry the mother of that woman, his mother-in-law. But what happens if his wife passes away? Is there still a restriction against marrying the mother-in-law? Machloket Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Shmuel. Rabbi Shmuel says yes. Rabbi Akiva seems to say no. The question is, when Rabbi Akiva says no, what does he mean? Tosafot over there says all he means is that there's no chiyuv karet, but there's still an iser in marrying her. Rashi over there says that's not the case. He says there's no iser at all in marrying this woman. It's just an arur. It's not a good thing to do. It's improper, but there's no restriction. Based on that, Rashi cannot explain the case like we just explained it. Because in this scenario, Shimon's wife passed away, who is the daughter. And that means that Reuven's wife, who is his mother-in-law, is a mother-in-law without the daughter alive. And therefore, Rashi the Shita Do says that's not restricted, it's not an erva. So Rashi did not explain the scenario that way. So what did Rashi do? So Rashi made it very simple. He says that you have Reuben and Shimon who are brothers. Reuben's married to a woman, and his mother-in-law is restricted to him. His mother-in-law, vis-a-vis his brother, Shimon, has no relationship. The mother-in-law is a problem through marriage for this individual. The only reason Reuben can't marry his mother-in-law is because he's married to her daughter. For Shimon, there's no relationship. Even though Shimon is Reuben's brother, Shimon has no relationship to Reuben's mother-in-law. Shimon can marry Reuben's mother-in-law, assuming that Reuben's father-in-law passed away. So that's exactly the scenario that Rashi creates, which is that when Reuben's father-in-law passed away, Shimon, his brother, married Reuben's mother-in-law. Now, Shimon passes away without any children, and now Reuben's faced with the possibility of performing Yibum with his mother-in-law. So in that case, it's Patur because of the Erva, and she also is Poter, all her co-wives, because of that. Now, the same is true in the next two scenarios, which is Eim Chamuto v'Eim Chamiv. That is, his mother-in-law's mother, and his father-in-law's mother. So again, both of these are restricted the same way that his granddaughters are restricted. In the reverse direction, his mother-in-law's mother and his father-in-law's mother are also restricted. And again, the scenario is the same here, which is a case where Reuben married a woman, and then the woman's grandmother, that's grandmother either through the maternal side or the paternal side, their husband passes away, and Shimon marries one of those women. Shimon marries one of those women and then passes away. Reuben's now faced with marrying his wife's grandmother, either from the maternal or paternal side, and that is an erva, and therefore he would be exempt in each of these cases. Right, next. Achoto mi'imo. His sister through his mother. Again, this is a scenario where he has half-brothers. He has a number of half-brothers and sisters. He has a brother through the father. Reuben and Shimon are brothers through the father. They also happen to have a sister, but the sister is only related to Reuben. Reuben has a half-sister through a common mother. So they have a common mother, but they don't have a common father. Reuben and Shimon are half-brothers, but that's through a common father, not through a common mother. So now you have Reuben and Shimon who are half-brothers through their father, and Reuben and Dina who are half-brother and sister through their mother. So Reuben's related to both of them. Reuben has a half-sister, and he has a half-brother. Shimon to Dina has no relationship. They're not related at all, because the only way that Shimon is related to Reuben is through their father, and he has no relationship to Dina. As far as Dina's concerned, she's a woman from the street. He has absolutely no relationship to her. So therefore, Shimon could marry Reuben's half-sister in that scenario, Dina. So now what happens is, Shimon's married to this woman, and now he passes away without children. Reuben's now faced with marriage to his half-sister. That he can't do. That's an irva. Ve'achot imo, the sister of his mother. Again, it's the same scenario over here where they do not share a common mother. Reuben and Shimon are related through their father. They don't share a common mother. Therefore, Reuben's aunt is not related to Shimon, because Reuben's aunt, sister of his mother, has nothing to do with Shimon because they don't share a common mother. They only share a common father. Again, if Shimon marries Reuben's aunt through his mother, then that's someone who's not related to him. Again, if Shimon passes away without children, Reuben's now faced with performing Yibum with his aunt, which is not permitted. An aunt is restricted minat Torah because of Erva, and therefore, that's Dodato or Eshet Dodo. Those are all restricted, and because of that, he will not perform Yibum with her, and she will be Poter herself as well as all of the co-wives. Vachot Ishto, his wife's sister. Again, two brothers can marry two sisters. One husband may not marry two sisters, but two brothers can marry two sisters. So in this case, Reuben married Rachel, Shimon married Leah. So now you have two brothers married to two sisters, and then Shimon passed away without children. Reuben is now faced with a scenario of marrying Leah, which is his wife's sister, which he's not permitted to do. Again, Erva. Again, while she's alive, But that once she's alive, and he was exempted because Rachel was alive at the time, Shuv lo yivneh. If he didn't build it at that time because of Erva, then later on when his wife passes away, he still can't perform Yibum. So now, again, Reuben will not perform Yibum over here because he's dealing with an Erva, his wife's sister. So she'll be Peturah as well as all of her co-wives. Okay, number 13. Ve'eshet achiv mi'imo. The wife of his brother through his mother. So again, this is a similar scenario to what we saw before. Achoto mi'imo. Which is that you can have a half-sister through your mother. You also can have a half-brother through your mother. So here, Reuven has half brothers. He has Shimon, who is his brother through the father. And he also has Yosef, who is a common brother, but only through the mother. They share a common mother, but not a common father. So in that scenario, Yosef can marry a woman, and then he passes away Yosef. Shimon has no relationship to Yosef's wife. So he has no relation to Yosef's wife. He can marry that woman. Now he marries that woman, passes away without children. Reuven's now faced with Eshet Achiv, the wife of his brother. Oh, Eshet Achiv, you're allowed to perform evil, but it's only when they are brothers through the father. Over there with Yosef, he's only a brother through the mother. That's an erva, that's not overridden by Yibum, and therefore he is restricted in marrying this woman. Then the next one is, Ve'eshet Achiv, Shelo Haya Be'olamo. We discussed this in the introduction, which is that the wife of a brother who didn't exist at the time. Reuven passes away without any children, and he has a brother that's born after he passes away, like Levi. And then Shimon went ahead and it was Miyabe Mishto. Shimon performed Ibum with this woman. Then he has other women also, and then he dies. And now Levi's faced with performing Ibum. Since the first woman was married to Shimon because she was Reuven's wife, Levi has no right to marry that woman because that woman was married to his brother Reuven, who he did not exist in the same time in the world with him, and therefore they're out. All the women are out because these are Achim Shaloi Abalam Yachad. The last one is Kalato, his daughter-in-law. This is a case, again, where his son, Reuven's son, marries a woman, and then Reuven's son dies. When Reuven's son dies, his daughter-in-law is obviously restricted to him, but his brother, Shimon, can marry Reuven's daughter-in-law. Again, it would be no different than marrying Reuven's daughter, right, marrying his niece. This is just a niece through marriage. But over here, his son passed away, and now left his daughter-in-law single. His brother, Shimon, marries this daughter-in-law. So now, Shimon passed away without children. Reuven could be faced with marrying his daughter-in-law, who is an erva to him. And since he's an erva to him, that's, again, exempted from Yibum, and all the co-wives are exempted from Yibum. Hare elu potrot tzarotahem, v'tzarot tzarotahem, min ha-chalitza, min ha-yibum, ad sof olam. It's a repetition of what we saw earlier in the Mishnah, which is, each one of these erevot, first of all, is poter themselves. In addition to that, they're poter all the co-wives. And then those co-wives, if they marry another brother, will also exempt themselves, as well as any of the other co-wives in the next marriage. Tzarot, tzarotehen, on, ad sova olam. As long as there is some connection back to the original marriage, then all of those are considered to be arayot. Bikulan, imetu, o mianu, o nitgershu, o shenimtu, ailonit, tzarotehen mutarot. In any of these scenarios, if before they fall to Yibum, they predecease the erva, meaning this woman dies. So yes, there was an erva married to his brother, but they predecease the need for Yibum, then there's Yibum performed. The erva is no longer an issue anymore because she's not alive. Or mianu, if they were ketanot, if they were young girls. Miun is a way, a form of girushin from a ketana. A ketana cannot really get married because she does not have the ability to perform kiddushim, to do a kinyan. Her father can marry off a ketana. So a case there where a father marries off a ketana, there's kiddushim in a Torah. Gerushin can be done, but then that girl becomes what's called the yitoma b'chayei avia. That's one way. Or if her father passed away while she was a ketana, then there's nobody to marry her off. In either of those two scenarios, she can get married, be kiddushin dirabanan. Her brother, her mother can marry off, be kiddushin dirabanan. In that scenario, the way to undo kiddushin dirabanan is called miyun. Miyun is the way to reject. She can reject the marriage. So over here, if you have a ketana who's an erva, Reuven is now faced with marrying one of Shimon's wives. Shimon passed away without any children. And one of Shimon's wives is a ketana. She is an underage girl, but she's also an erva to Reuven. So she's preventing there being any performance of Yibum over here. So what we say there is, bimayin, do miyun. Because if you do miyun, then there'll be no marriage, and then all the other wives will be available for Yibum, because there's no erva there. So first of all, if she performed miyun beforehand, then for sure, the other wives are now up for Yibum. But there we'll see later on in the Mishnayot, Machloket, but some Tanaim suggest that even after the fact, she should perform miyun, because miyun works retroactively as if there's no marriage. So since there's no marriage, then we allow him to marry the other wives. O nitgarshu, if there's a divorce here, the erva is divorced from his brother, then again, the other wives, co-wives, are not patur anymore. Or if the arayot are found to be women who cannot give birth. The Gemara's Mishnah assumes here that ailonit, a woman who cannot give birth, is a kedushei taut. It's a mistaken kiddushin. The premise of getting married to the woman is that you would have children with this woman. When you find out after the fact that you cannot have children with this woman, it is kiddushei ta'ut. There is a problem in the kiddushin, and it unwinds the kiddushin retroactively. Since it unwinds the kiddushin retroactively, therefore, there is no marriage to the erva. If that's the case, then the other co-wives are not turot. There are those that say, Tosfot talks about it a little bit, but there are other rishonim who suggest that even if he knew at the time that she married her, that she was an ilonit, there's no din of ibum with this woman because she cannot give birth. And therefore, it says, v'lo yimachesh shmo miYisrael. This is a case where it would have been machui anyway from this woman. So this woman's not even in the picture of ibum. And therefore, it would not be puter the other women. Tzarotehem mutarot. In all these cases, the tzarot are not exempted from yibum because the erva has been taken out of the picture. These are different ways of taking the erva out of the picture. She dies. She was divorced. She did miyun. Or she's found to be alonit, so there's no kiddushin. So in all those cases, the erva is out of the picture. The other co-wives are not exempt. They have to perform yibum. V'yata yachol amar b'chamato v'em chamato v'em chamim shenimtzu alonit. Mishnah says, just by definition, his mother-in-law and his wife's grandmother, maternal and paternal grandmothers, cannot be an ilonit. Because the fact that he's married to this woman means by definition the mother already had a child or the grandmother had children. I mean, when you go backwards up the lineage, you can't say ilonit anymore because we clearly have children over here and they're not an ilonit. Oshimi anu. The other thing you can't say is that they had miyun. Because miyun only applies to a ktana, a girl underage. A girl can only have children if she's already reached the age of maturity. So if these women already had children, because clearly he's married to the daughter of one of them or the granddaughter of one of them, then they're clearly not ktanot. If they're not ktanot, there's no miyun. So what the Mishnah says here is that ilonut and miyun cannot apply to those cases. But his daughter, the case of miyun, could apply even though the father is still alive, and that I spoke about before, which is that it's called the yitomah b'chaya avia. Her father married her off once, she divorced that first guy and now married a second guy, so there you can have a scenario where she could be a ktana and still be performing miyun in the life of her father. So that's just a scenario that is a yitomah v'chaye avia. Right now, ketzad potrot saritehen. What is the example where they take care of their co-wives? Haitab bito, achat mikol ariyot elu nisuot achiv. So again, we went through all these scenarios. His daughter, or any of these other ariyot, are married to his brother. Reuven's brother Shimon is married to one of these ariyot. V'lo isha acheret. And he has an additional wife. He has a co-wife. Umeit. And then Shimon passes away. Kashem shepito ptura. Just like automatically his daughter, Reuven's daughter, is ptura from Yibum because she's an erva. Kach tzarata ptura. So too, the co-wife is automatically exempted from Yibum, also chalitza. Halcha tzarat bito. If the co-wife then went ahead, v'niseit l'achiv asheni, then married Levi. That co-wife. So Shimon is married to Rachel v'leia. Rachel is Reuven's daughter. And since Rachel is Reuven's daughter, he's exempt. When Shimon passes away, he's exempt from Yibum because of his daughter Rachel. Leah is also exempt as a co-wife. Leah then goes ahead and marries Levi, another brother, Velo Isha Acheret. And Levi doesn't just have Leah as a wife, but he also has Sarah as his wife, Umeit. And then Levi passes away. Kashem Shetzarat Bito Pturah, just like Leah, Reuven can't marry because she was originally Tzarat Bito. So too, Kach Tzarat Tzarat Pturah. So too, Sarah is Pturah in that case. Even this goes on 100 times, and there's another brother that they marry, another brother, each time, as long as at one point they were Asurim to Reuven, they continue to be Asur, and they poter also the co-wives in that case. Ketzad, what's that case? Imetu tzaruteim mutarot. If the tzarot pass away, then they are mutarot. Haita bito, achad mikol ariel te'elu nusod achiv. Reuven has a daughter named Rachel, who married Shimon. Shimon has 2 wives. He has a wife, Rachel, and a wife, Leah. V'lo isha acheret, has another wife, Leah. Meita bito, and Rachel now predeceases her father. She passes away. Onit gashar, she's divorced from Shimon. V'achakach meitachiv, then Shimon passes away without children. Tzarata, Leah, the co-wife, muteret, can marry Reuven because the erva was taken out of the picture. His daughter was taken out of the picture. Either she predeceased him, or she was divorced from his brother. V'chola yechola l'mein, v'lo mi'ana, tzarata chuleset v'lo mi'tiyabemet. Anybody could have done miyun and doesn't perform miyun, then tzarata, the co-wife, does chalitza, not yibum. Mina Torah, she could perform yibum or chalitza, because as far as the Torah is concerned, this ketana is not married to this individual. It's all midrabanan. Nevertheless, since midrabanan, it looks like there is a tzarat erva, therefore the chachamim force you to do chalitza and not do the yibum because it looks bad. It looks like you had a erva in the picture, and even though there's an erva in the picture, you're going to go marry the co-wife. The truth is, the erva is only midrabanan because it's a ketana. Nevertheless, since it looks bad, the Chachamim say you can only perform chalitza with the co-wife, not yubum. Why do you have to do chalitza? Because min haTorah, you're not married to this other erva. So min haTorah, you have to do something. So we force you to do chalitza and not do yibum. Now the Gemara says, michte, kulu miachot isha yalfinan. All of these are learnt out of achot isha. That's what I read to you before, which is, isha lachuta lo tikach, litzror legalot ervata. The source for co-wives being exempted through an erva comes out of achot isha. So then, yalfinan litnei achot isha bereisha. Why isn't that the first thing mentioned in the Mishnah? If that's the source for the exemption of co-wives, that should have been the first example in the Mishnah, because that's the obvious case. Everything else is derivative of it. If you want to say no, the Mishnah goes through the most stringent erva to the least stringent erva. Rabbi Shimon, and it's Rabbi Shimon. It's Machlokes Rabbi Shimon the Chachamim in the Gemara and Sanhedrin. What is the most severe punishment that you can get from Beit Din? The Chachamim believe skila is the most stringent or severe, and Rabbi Shimon believes sreifa is the most severe. So let us say that our Mishnah is authored by Rabbi Shimon, Damar Sreifa Chamura. So therefore, that's why it gave the order in the Mishnah. It picks things like Bito and Bat Bito, which are through Sreifa, they're put first. So Gemara says, well, if that's the case, then you should have done after Bito, then the Ikar Sreifa B'Chamuto. So Litnei Chamuto Bereisha, first of all, put mother-in-law first, because that's the main place where Sreifa is said, number one. Ikar Sreifa B'Chamuto Tiva Vod. So she should have been in the list early on. Kalato doesn't come up to the last one here. So if you're talking about a severity of punishment, you don't have it in the right order either. That should have started with Chamato, which is the main place of Sreifa. Should have had Kalato in that list as well. Yet, Chamato was like 5, 6, 7 in the list. Kalato's at the end of the list. So that's not what's happening here. The Bata Sreifa Skila Chamura. So Kalato, which is also Skila, should have come right after Sreifa. According to Rabbi Shimon, Sreifa is the most severe. Skila is the next. Kalato gets Skila. That should have been the next one in the list. Yet, Kalato is the last thing mentioned. The Mishnah, Ella, Bito, came into Achim, Midrasha, Chavivalei. This is what we learned in the Gemara and Chagiga together. Bito, which comes from a drasha, is Chaviv. What do you mean it comes from a drasha? Bito is explicit in the Pasuk. No, but it's also Bito me Anusato, which comes out of a drasha. Kulunami Midrasha Ato. What are you talking about? All of them are from a drasha. Because a drasha here is from achot isha. So they all come out of a drasha. No, it says, Nehidlian Yibum Achim Midrasha. You're right. All the Ariot mentioned our Mishnah come out of a drasha for Yibum. But Ikari Surayu Behejakativ. All these Ariot are written explicitly in the Torah. Bito Ikari Surah Midrasha. By his daughter, it's not mentioned explicitly in the Torah. It only comes out of a drasha. Dama Rova, Amali Rav Yitzchak Bar Avdime, Acha Heina Heina, Acha Zima Zima. That is the Gzeira Shava that generates this scenario. Now, what is the Gzeira Shava? Because the Pasuk says, Zervat Ishao Bita Lo Tegale. Man may not marry a woman and her daughter. Et Bat Bina, Et Bat Bita. And including granddaughters as well. So now, that scenario is a scenario of marriage. How do you know that? Because it uses the word Isha. Isha means through Kiddushin. So that's a case where it's your either stepdaughter or a case where it's your daughter, a person's daughter through marriage. But there, lo tikach lagolotver, shara, heina, zima, hi. The word heina and zima are both used in that pasuk. Now, we have another pasuk that says, ervat bat pincha, ubat pitcha lo tigale, ervatan, ki ervatcha heina. What's that talking about? Bat pincha, ubat pitcha, lo tigale ervatan. What's that talking about? We just saw a granddaughter over here. So what does the Gemara say? Over there, the word isha is not mentioned. This is a granddaughter through illicit or through rape, through non-marriage. It's a granddaughter through non-marriage situation. Okay, so then we have over there, bat pincha, bat pitcha. What about a daughter? Daughter is missing in that pasuk. It only mentions granddaughter, not daughter. Kal v'chomer. Granddaughter is restricted. Certainly the daughter is restricted. We have a principle, ein onshin min adin, ve'ein mazhi rin min adin. A kal v'chomer cannot be used to generate an iser in the Torah, cannot be used to generate a punishment in the Torah. That's the case, then even though it's a kal v'chomer, we can't do it. We can't use a kal v'chomer. So the pasuk ends, ki ervatcha heina. So the word heina appears here in this pasuk. It also appears in the pasuk of isha u'bita. And what the Gemara says is heina heina is a gzer shava. Just like over there, granddaughter and daughter are equal, so to over here, granddaughter and daughter are equal. That's the heina heina aspect of it. Then, zima, zima comes from the fact that the punishment of sreifa is mentioned, zima hi. Ba'esh yisrufu oto ve'eten ve'lo tiyeh zima b'tochachem. So you see the word sreifa is used here, but also the word zima is used. And over here in our pasuk here, it says, sharahena zimahi. Gzer shava zima zima tells you that the punishment for isha u'bita or bita is sreifa. So now that I have sreifa there by bita through marriage, then I also, through the word heina heina, that gzer shava moves also sreifa over to the case of bat anusato or bat bito and bat vino through anusato. So bat anusato is all learned out of these double gzer shava. That's the both the isur, the restriction is learned out of the gzer shava of heina heina, and the punishment is learned out of the gzer shava zima zima. So the whole bat anusato is a derivative of a drosha. So since the drosha is chaviva, he started out with that. So that's where he started out. So asha damarat kol milta de acha midrosha chavile litnei lachot isha lebesof. Then put achot isha at the end, because that's the only one that doesn't come out of a drosha. Achot isha is the source for tzor, for tzara. The tour of tzara comes out of isha lachota litzor ervata. That's where it comes out of. So Mar says, ayri de ayri bi isra achvata tana achot ishto. Since you're already dealing with the isur of brothers or sisters, then it went on to deal with all brothers and sisters. I mean, once it decided to start with bito, it started with bito, and then it moves through a logical progression in the Mishnah from bito. It deals with daughter, granddaughter, then it deals with mother-in-law, grandmothers-in-law, and then it deals with brothers, sisters, so it kept them all together. So even though, again, there's no drasha, it should have gone at the end, nevertheless, since you're already moving through a logical progression, it was only the beginning point where we say, okay, it's a drosha, so I put it first. That's bito. After that, it moves through a logical progression, irrespective of whether it's a drosha or not a drosha. All right, we're going to come back and continue to discuss this tomorrow. We're stopping here on Daf Gimel, 8 lines down on the Daf Gimel Amud Aleph.